And now, nationally recognized financial experts Scott Hansen and Pat McClain of Hansen McClain Advisors. It's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hansen McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
Pat McClain, thanks for joining us.
That's right. Both myself and my co-host, we are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. That just means that we are practicing financial.
We meet with people like you.
Yeah, we spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. And we take your calls, answer your questions regarding things in the financial world. And we also talk about some things that might be happening in the current economic environment.
Global economy.
Things to pay attention to and things to ignore. And
Our objective is to help you make good decisions. That's the objective.
You know, it's funny. We've noticed... for most people, their objective is not to be as wealthy as possible.
They think it is.
They state that. They buy lottery tickets when the lottery's big. We hear about it in the news. They make big news and all that sort of stuff. But did you see that story a few weeks ago, Matt? I'm getting off topic, but there was I think it was like a bar and grill. Like 20 employees went in on a lottery ticket.
Okay.
And someone was reading off the numbers on a text or someone said, and it was the previous week's numbers.
Oh.
And they thought they won.
Oh, no.
For 20 minutes, they're all celebrating. The cook throws off his apron. I quit. And everyone's all having a good old time. And for about 20 minutes until they realized that they weren't the winners.
And then
the guy put his apron back on.
He's like, I'm sorry. Everything I said, they take it back.
Anyway, that's all kind of a fantasy for people, what it would be like to win. For most people, they're not necessarily so interested in becoming wealthy. They're more concerned about not becoming poor.
That's the major.
And being able to maintain some lifestyle that they've become accustomed to.
A standard of living.
So maybe in your 20s, you still have these dreams of something. Usually by the time you're in your 50s, you kind of figure out where your lifestyle is going to be, right?
That's a hope.
And the objective for most people is to be able to maintain that and have some sort of financial security. Retirement in the 90s, a lot of people wanted to retire as young as possible, and that was kind of in vogue. These days, there's a lot of people saying, you know, I don't really care if I want to. I don't know if I ever want to retire.
Yeah.
But most people want to be in a position where retirement's an option, where work is an option, not an obligation, where you have the ability to say, I'm not going to work any longer. You can choose retirements on your terms, not the other
way. And many times people think they're going to work forever and something happens in their life that causes them to stop work. Their health, a loved one's health, the job.
Yeah. And so part of what we talk about in this program is things in the financial world to help people be able to maintain their same standard of living, have less financial stress in their life, make wise choices with their money. We're realistic about things. We don't sit and promise we've got the latest, greatest investment out there because, frankly, they don't really exist.
And actually, quite frankly, Scott, it's actually, I think there's more good that we help people by helping them get rid of some debt, like paying off their mortgage before they retire. That is a key part of financial planning.
Yeah.
In fact, it's step number two in the 7 personal decision points, which is the financial planning process we use.
And sometimes, after a while you say, do I own these material things or do these material things own me? Right?
Oh, I know.
So sometimes, I think sometimes people a little further in life, they realize, I don't know if I need these particular material things. I'll never forget a client of ours years ago. They had three boys. And they're in talk about their own retirement. We're doing some planning and whatnot. And we're talking about the boys. Oh, yeah, well, Billy is doing this and this. He's saving his 401k. And Steven's got a good job and he's doing this or just out of college or whatever it was, right? And then their third, well, Joel's a different story. They start talking about their one child. They said, yeah, he's down in Latin America somewhere. We don't even know where he is. He'll work, find some job to earn just enough money to get by to kind of travel to the next region he's going to. So he works very little. He's been living. And how long has he been living like that? He's been like 3 years. You know?
Wow, sounds good.
And I remember saying, you know, maybe Joel's the one who's got to figure it out.
Yeah.
We're the ones sitting there stressed, worried about the finances.
And Joel's just traveling the world.
But in any case, Joel's probably doesn't listen to this program on a regular basis because he doesn't really think much about the future. Most people do listen to this radio program, are thinking about the point is having your finances arranged in such a manner
to serve you.
I so often in our industry we see products pitched these companies will the investment firms will put out products. Wall Street creates products.
That's what they do.
Great products and sell them. Hope it, usually on some sort of aspiration, promising high things. And I think the latest, we talked about this a couple of years ago when we saw these being pitched, these master limited partnerships.
MLPs.
Okay? Master limited partnerships. And if you think, well, if you like limited partnerships, surely you like a master limited partnership, right?
Correct. Because they're better than limited
partnerships. It's master.
I mean, what's going wrong with master?
Master limited partnership. Kind of like, why? I take the preferred shares, of course.
Oh, of course.
The premium seats. Master limited partnerships.
Yeah, I actually had a client once ask me, who gets those preferred shares?
Yeah, we can't talk about that.
Not you. Anyway.
not you, sorry.
Preferred is just a different type of securities, and you don't have to be a preferred person to get a preferred.
It's not
necessarily either better or worse than common stock.
Sounds good, though.
But preferred. It sounds
anyway,
good.
Anyway, master limited partnership.
Master limited partnership. Tell me more.
So these are business structures where, first of all, you're a partner. Now, if you're a little bit older investor and you remember back in the 80s, the partnerships, you probably stay away from partnerships because you had a bad experience.
But many people that were invested in the 80s,
they're older, and a lot of people are,
they missed that. So if you're in your 40s right now, 50s, you probably missed
maybe even 60s.
The limited
you
partnership.
You didn't have any money back then, yeah. So
and you should be thankful you missed it, by the way.
They did not turn out well for most. These master limited partnerships, it's a form of partnership. The majority of these were invested in oil and gas delivery, transportation.
Yes, and they were peddled as, what a great yield. You're going to get lots of yield. And there's always very, very little risk because they hold hard assets. A pipeline. You own this part of this pipeline.
How can
what
that
can
go
wrong?
Bad?
What could be wrong with a pipeline?
We all know energy. People need
pipeline. You could see it.
People need oil. They need gas.
You pound on it. Oil comes through there. What could go wrong? Well, what went wrong, Scott?
And a lot of these were yielding 8%,
9%. Which should have been the first clue that they had tremendous amounts of risk.
So here's what would happen. Some investor would go to their broker and say, oh, these interest rates are terrible. These CD rates are terrible. I need something with a good yield. Do you have anything that pays a good yield?
And what they forgot is that the most important thing you should be interested in your investments is a return of principal.
Return
of principal.
Do
I get my money back? Then the second thing is, how much money do I get on my money? So it's return of principal,
right.
And then it goes to return on principal.
So
they got part of this right.
This was just a couple years ago. Billions of dollars flowing into these things. We talked about the air. First of all, anytime something is offering a yield that is that much higher than the rest of the market,
you should be just a little bit like skeptical.
I mean, I can go to the bank and borrow at 3%.
Yeah, why couldn't they?
Right. So I always look at things. If I could borrow 3%.
Why can't the 4%? Pipeline company borrow at 3 or 4%?
Many of these master limited partnerships are down dramatically. I mean, 50%, 60%, 70%. Down dramatically.
And no longer paying the yields.
Because some of these things
are just
shutting
down. Also the same things that there was... some trades in it inside of an IRA. It became a taxable event.
Oh, yeah. There's a.
It was a.
That's right.
I had never even seen anything like that, but it was because they called it non. It was non-core business. It was non-core business taxation. And
that's right.
The IRAs didn't allow it. So these people were now getting taxed on their IRAs and penalties because they didn't know they were supposed to pay taxes.
And if you say, how come you guys don't know that? Because we would never
sell that garbage.
We would never recommend this in an IRA.
Never. Or period.
We're also seeing exchange-traded notes, ETNs, exchange-traded notes. These are not ETFs, exchange-traded funds. They're very different than exchange-traded funds. ETNs are also packaged, produced by Wall Street, right? And what these are, it's unsecured debt that pays a return that's linked to some underlying investment. So if you bought an ETF, an exchange-traded fund that invested in the S&P 500 index, for example, you would actually, the underlying would take ownership of those securities. You would have some ownership.
You would own the S&P 500, Standard & Poor's 500 largest companies in the U.S.
And these exchange-traded notes, again, were pitched quite a bit because they had high yields. Many of the underlying investments, guess what they were in? Master limited partnerships.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. A lot of them. It's amazing. Or they were tied to oil and gas, some oil and gas index.
It was a form of leverage.
A lot of them were double leveraged.
That's terrible.
And those are down. Some of these I was looking at were down 50% year to date. That's 2016. Not saying what happened in 2015 as
that's,
we saw oil
that's
prices.
That's terrible. And the what really makes it terrible is the type of investors that were actually investing in those types of things. That's what makes it really terrible. It was mom and pop that wanted, hey, I just need to make more than I'm getting now.
It's very tempting to chase yield when you're looking for yield. Look, you go into retirement. We totally understand. You're looking at retirement thinking, how am I going to generate a monthly income? That's the kind of thing we talk with our clients about all the time. How do I generate a monthly check?
That's what the...
You know, if you look at how most pension plans do it...
They're not buying a ton of master limited partnerships.
No. They have broad diversified portfolios. They assume long-term rates of return. They set up monthly checks. Some months they make tons of money. Some months they don't. They send out the monthly checks. That's typically how we structure things with our clients who have a monthly income.
The higher the yield...
If you just chase yield...
You're putting risk.
You are going to end up in investments like this.
I remember about 7 or 8 months ago, a gentleman called our show. He was in his late 70s. And he said, hey, I've got this bond portfolio that's yielding 7%. What do you think? Can I do better than that? And I remember thinking, I hope he took our advice. Because we said, what you have is a junk bond portfolio. And he said, how do you know? And I said,
well, nothing's based on the yield. And it may be leveraged.
And it probably leveraged. And we
and
said
probably the highest yields were in oil and gas.
And I remember our advice to him was get rid of that immediately. And I hope he took the advice because the junk bond market has not been treated.
And back
kindly.
To Pat's point, return of principal.
You want your money back first. You want to know you're going to get your money back. Then,
by the way,
return
these investment products primarily pitched by commissioned brokers, not independent investment advisors. Who did fee asset management? These are pitched by people who got
primarily.
A commission. Primarily, people who got a commission. And if you work with it, if you have an advisor, you have a structure where the advisor's interests are more aligned with your long-term interest, where it's a fee-based approach. Firms like Hanson Plan, there's other good firms out there, where it's a fee-based approach, you have a much greater chance of avoiding this sort of thing. And if you had any of your portfolio, it'd be very small. Obviously, we avoided exchange-traded notes. And master limited partnerships. We got to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Got a question? Visit moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Hope everyone's enjoying their weekend. We're talking about finances, money issues. You got a question regarding anything in your financial life. It could be retirement planning. It could be insurance issues. It could be estate planning.
College funding.
Whatever the case may be. To join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. It's actually really interesting what's happening in some of the college.
The 529
Well,
plan?
Just looking, the debt is over $1 trillion.
Oh,
right?
It's crazy.
It's
crazy.
I mean, I read these stories. I feel sorry for some of these. I really, honestly feel sorry for some of these kids, particularly some that grow up, how do I say this nicely, but.
Wealthy?
Not the wealthy kids. I don't feel sorry for those kids. It's the ones that, you know,
middle class.
Or the lower, yeah. Right? And then they get, particularly some of these colleges, that they've got a horrible track record as far as getting these kids jobs.
Yeah, some of the...
And they talk them into signing up for these student loans. They get out of school. They got $30,000 in student loans. They have no job prospects.
Nothing.
It's terrible.
Yeah, and it's a scam. A lot of it's a scam. And the government feeds it.
I know.
Although they've shut a couple down. Anyway.
Yeah, the for-profit schools, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Anyway, it's just a total mess. Yeah.
And the more that you throw money at this, the higher the college pricing will continue to go.
I know.
It's a supply and demand. You see it in every industry, the same thing happens. That's what happened to housing. They throw money at it, made capital more available, cheap, easier to qualify.
We're not going to solve the... Student
price
education
drove prices up.
Yeah, prices are through the roof. It's a very challenging for one of the things. I mean, we counsel a lot of people on the kids. I mean, I see people jeopardizing their retirement.
Yes.
And maybe if they don't want to retire, that's fine. But there's a good chance that one day you're not going to be able to work.
Did you have student loans in college?
I couldn't qualify. My income was too high. Not my family's, my own. And it's not like I had came from a very solid middle class family, but
I had
to pay for. But I made more than $10,000 a year. I had a little treat room business. I made too much money in my treat room business, and so I couldn't qualify for student loans.
I was a waiter, and you didn't have to declare all your income back there. But I would get student loans, and I actually had a stockbroker at the time, and I would take my student loans to the stockbroker.
In college?
Yeah. And a stockbroker in college? You didn't have a stockbroker in college?
I think I was more interested in how much full disclosure should I have on the station here? I was a college student.
I remember the stock I bought. I don't remember why I bought it at the time, but I bought TWA Airlines. They're no longer in business.
But that worked for you.
I made money on it. I made money on it.
On TWA?
Yeah.
What, did you sell short or something?
No, at the time it was moving. It was back in 1980.
That's how you knew you wanted to be a wealth manager. That was 19.
I bought my first stock when I was 17.
With your student loan money?
No, that one was just money. Roosevelt Telephone.
But you had stock.
Yeah.
And then you had money in savings and long-term investments, and you took a student loan.
Yeah, well, that's how I got the money. I took the student loan.
How you got the money.
I took the student loan. I brought it to the stockbroker. I invested it. It was awesome.
You would not recommend that today.
No.
Think about the risk involved there.
What's going to happen
to you? That's hilarious. Can you imagine what terrible advice that'd be for somebody? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to take a loan, any kind of loan, and go buy an individual stock.
I bought three individual stocks. That was not completely without risk.
Did you make money on all of them?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, come on.
I did.
Where did you lose money? Pat is like the guy you run into at a party who's bragging about how much money he made in his stock, and he never tells you about the one that he lost money on.
I ended up liquidating. I bought a Windsurfer with some of my holdings after a couple years.
That's not losing money on a stock.
I have a Windsurfer now?
I've never known you to windsurf. I've known you 25 years. Pat has the windsurfing stories. I got the windsurf. I remember you were going to have like a special trailer made so you can bring your windsurf down. That was having like a special delivery.
Enough.
I don't even think I've seen a picture of you on a windsurf.
All right, let's take this call. If you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSEN.
Didn't you ride your bike across the country?
I tried. I ran out of money. I was graduated from high school. Called home. Hey, Dad, can you send me some money? What'd he answer? Where would I get it? Excellent point. Excellent point, Dad. You didn't have any money either. No one had any money.
That's funny.
And then he did point out, he said, by the way, you know, you're the one on vacation, right? Not me. I'm like, that's an excellent point too, Dad.
But you're the grown-up. I'm a college kid.
I was in high school. I had just graduated
kids
from
high school. But Dad, I'm supposed to do these things. I'm this age. As my son said to me, Dad, my brain's not fully developed yet, so I can't really. It's the part of my brain that's making judgment calls. It's not fully developed, so you really can't hold me accountable for this.
He told you that?
Yeah, I laughed.
The mere fact that he can make that argument means it's probably fully developed.
All right, we need to go to Ken.
Ken. Sorry for the pitter patter.
Ken, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you doing?
Ken, thanks for your patience. I saw Chris in our studios like yelling at us. She's all angry because we hadn't kept you on hold too long. So.
That's no problem. No problem. My question is about retirement situation. I spoke with one of the advertisers of probably the station that you guys broadcast on, as well as another local station, about financial planning. And I looked into what I was told was some kind of insurance policy where I would pay X amount of dollars per month. I think it was close to $400 per month.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get, I would pay on it at the age of
60. Yeah.
A dividend or a return of about $50,000 per year. And I was told it would be disbursed the way that I wanted it disbursed.
How old are you now?
I'm 45.
Okay. So they said you could put this money in for 5 years.
Until I was 65. In other words, 20 years roughly. And then I'm supposed to get $50,000 a month for the rest of my life, whatever. No, I'm sorry, per year. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I'd do it.
$50,000 a year?
$50,000 a year.
So what did you do with that information? What did you think?
Well, my biggest concern is the company that's doing the investing to get me the dividend going belly up in 20 years.
Mm-hmm. What kind of company? What was the investment product?
It was a universal life or a variable universal life policy?
It was some kind of life insurance policy where after X amount of months or years, it'll be worth 70-something thousand.
Let me ask you this, Ken. Are you participating in a Roth IRA?
No, I don't have anything. I've never put anything in terms of retirement.
Did the investment representative suggest a Roth IRA might be a good starting point? Before a life insurance policy?
Yeah.
Do you have?
Not really. They were mainly pushing the life insurance.
Do you have children at home?
No, I don't.
Oh my God!
Do you have? If you were to die, this is a bad question, but if you were to die tomorrow,
who is reliant on your income today?
Nobody.
All right. So Ken.
Oh my gosh,
Ken. So listen. First of all, don't ever talk to that person again. Right.
Really? Okay.
No, it is absolute.
Oh, come on. That's
garbage. It's garbage. It's garbage.
It's the worst financial advice I'd heard.
It's garbage. Really? The thing doesn't work. The numbers they show are made up.
A life insurance policy may be appropriate if you need life insurance, but you don't even have a need for life insurance. So what happens is you are paying for a product that has tremendously high, or you're not yet, but you're being pitched this, tremendously high internal expenses plus a cost for life insurance. Now, they say to you, this is how great it is. You put money in, it grows tax-deferred. You're not paying any taxes on any of your earnings throughout the year.
You get to take it out tax-free.
You get to take it out tax-free.
You know what this thing has?
Is that what they said to you? That's what they said. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, Ken, this thing has an extremely high, what we like to call YTB, which is yield to broker. It pays tremendous commissions to this guy.
To the person that's putting the policy.
And you know how much a Roth would pay this person? A Roth investment?
Nothing.
Almost nothing.
Here's the thing.
I'm so glad you called the show.
Yeah.
Don't talk to that guy ever again or that lady.
So there's two there's two things going on here. One,
it was a guy.
Okay.
A very, very well-known, popular.
Okay, well,
I'm sure he dressed nice.
I'm not going to say any names.
Well-polished shoes.
You look like a weatherman.
Yeah, it's nice suit.
Pointed at charge.
Yeah. Nice car he drove up.
Big words.
Spinning wheels on the car.
What he's doing is putting lipstick on a pig.
So there's two elements that were happening in this, right? The one is underlying investments. The underlying investments that this product had was some sort of mutual fund type investments where you can participate in a variety of different markets. That's the one thing, the underlying investments.
Okay.
The second is the wrapper it came in. So this wrapper was an insurance wrapper. This insurance wrapper had additional fees, plus it had life insurance, plus it had some tax benefits. Okay?
Okay.
Let's strip away the wrapper for a second. And if we looked at a wrapper of being a Roth IRA, Roth IRA is just, it's named after a senator, Senator Roth, who thought so highly of himself, he thought he'd name a retirement product after himself. Senator Roth is the one who sponsored the legislation.
You put the money in, you can invest it in
whatever you want.
Whatever you want. For you at your age, I would buy a total market index.
Or a variety, or a basket fund.
But you're 45.
Target maturity fund.
Something along that lines.
20 years
lines.
Out.
And then.
What did you call it? A target maturity fund?
Look, if you were my brother and I was talking to you, I'd say, look, go to the large no-load mutual fund family that you can think of, or the largest one. Look at a target date 20 years out.
Buy that.
Use a Roth IRA and put $400 a month into
it. And
that.
Let it grow.
You're not going to pay any commissions.
Let it grow. And when you take the money out, it's tax-free.
It's the best place for you to start. Once you've maxed out a Roth IRA,
call us back and we'll give you the next step. And that steps that we give you when you call us back will never, ever, ever include a life insurance policy because you have no need for life insurance.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Unless you're interested in how well this guy's lifestyle that is pitching it turns out, you don't want anything to do with it.
And by the way, for the rest of the listeners, if you want more information on our website, moneymatters.com, I wrote an article about this. I write for Kiplinger's last December. Just say no to universal life insurance as a retirement fund. You'll find that at moneymatters.com. It's the article I write for Kiplinger. Goes into this a little more detail. Ken, glad you called. We got to take a break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Want more advice on financial matters? Check out MoneyMatters.com, where you'll find information ranging from retirement to taxes to insurance to investments, all on MoneyMatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean. Hey, Scott?
Yes, sir.
So, congratulations on the award. And I hope you know how much I dislike wearing a suit, and especially a tuxedo. So I hope you appreciate the fact that...
You went to a dinner.
Yeah, I went to a dinner, which I dislike that sort of thing, period. But because you are my longtime business partner, I went to a dinner, and Scott received the Peter McEwen Award for Civic Entrepreneurship, which I thought was pretty nice. Which
that was
basically,
nice.
So the background of why Scott was given this award is because he's involved with a number of charities in leadership functions, and he tries to view charities kind of like businesses, which is you measure inputs, you measure outputs.
Which is sometimes challenging for nonprofits.
It's very challenging for nonprofits because nonprofits do great work, but you've got to measure inputs and outputs, and you got to think creatively about it. And that's why Scott was given the award. So
not that I've been tremendously successful in the entrepreneurial side of nonprofit work, because it's always quite challenging. But Pat, you won that. You've won a Pat. You know, it's funny. Pat got some award for something. It was like the executive of the year, I think. It was for some nonprofit work he did.
Yeah.
And so Pat was up this lunch and he says, "The thing that's most exciting for me about this is that I'm an executive. I didn't even know I was an executive. This is executive. It's an award for
it
an
was.
Executive. And I'm
and a bunch of people that from work were there, and I'm like, look at me. I'm an executive now."
Anyway, it's quite an honor.
It was very nice.
I'm in a couple, Sacramento Metro Chamber of Commerce. And honestly, I'm not terribly active. I'm a dues-paying member, but really been much of a chamber.
I had never been to a chamber function before at all.
Yeah, well, then.
Enough of that. We're going to take some calls. Let's talk to Steve in Colorado. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Scott and Pat.
Enjoy your
show very much.
Thank you, sir.
My father is 102 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
be 103 in April, and actually very good health. And he inherited some land from my mother, who died about 12 years ago, some farmland in Kansas, about $400,000 that he has sold and will close here in about a month. And he called me and asked for some advice. He wants to take about $100,000 out and put in his bank account, and then he wants to know what he can do with the other $300,000 that'll draw some interest.
And so he's saving this money for his golden years?
Well,
actually,
he is, because his golf score is about 102.
Is that? But that's,
wow.
That's actually better than mine.
He's pretty incredible.
Let me ask you this. So he inherited the property.
What was the value of that particular piece of land when he inherited it 12 years ago?
Yeah, that's a good question. The cost basis has actually gone down. It was worth more 12 years ago than
it
is today.
Yeah, because if the cost basis was up, we probably would have suggested some sort of installment sale on a portion.
And what?
Because there's a step up in basis upon someone's death. But
And what is your father's overall net worth, do you think, including whatever land he's got left?
Probably $600,000-$700,000.
Okay.
So this is actually a pretty interesting situation. This is the kind of thing I would love to hear five different qualified financial advisors give their kind of opinion on this, because there's so many different ways you can take this. But kind of at the core, investments are based on two main. Well, first of all, if you believe that you don't have a crystal ball. If you believe you have a crystal ball, then you go out and find whatever is the hot investment that's going to make you the most amount of money in the shortest period of time with the least amount of risk, right? But if you're at the point think, I don't think that's possible, you want to do something passive as opposed to, instead of trying to develop some piece of commercial real estate or something along those lines. So investments really come down to two things. One is risk tolerance. How much up and down in the value of an investment can you stomach? And the second is, how much time do you have before you need your principal? Those two things are kind of at the core, and we move out from there. So as investment advisor, just about any investment advisor would look at those two things first of all. What's the kind of risk tolerance? How much ups and downs can someone stomach? Second, when are the dollars needed?
And so your father's timeline may be inconsequential in this because it's your timeline. If he doesn't think he's ever going to spend the money, maybe he's investing it for you or your brothers and sisters.
Yeah, so the big question really is,
where's the money going to land?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of his concerns, is not only if he would need this $300,000 for an emergency, plus he wants that to go into his estate when he does die. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want it to have it be tied up for years where the estate can't get hold of it. So I know that's one of his concerns.
Got it. That won't be an issue as long as he has a living trust, which I assume that he has some legal documents too.
And you say his health is great.
Well, let's say it's very good for a 102-year-old man. You know, actually, you talk to him on the phone, and he would never know that he's on.
That's amazing.
And Steve, has he ever invested in something that prices on a daily basis, like stocks or bonds?
Yes, he has, and I think he's kind of got burned in the stock market. He's a little leery of the stock market right now.
Yeah. So
the question really
that's
is...
That's the driver, is how he's going to react.
Yeah, because as soon as you move out of... let's say bank investments, CDs. As soon as you move out of that, there is some degree of risk. And whatever you invest in, things will move up and down in value. He can take the money out and go invest in U.S. government bonds.
They will go up and down in value.
They will go up and down in value. So
if it was my dad.
Well, the interesting thing, he doesn't really have a need for yield.
Yeah, but why put him through any pain with market volatility or fluctuations? Why not just put it all in the bank?
Well, that's a good.
If it were my dad, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of what I'd
say. Let's split it between a couple banks.
If I was so lucky to have a father that had that kind of money,
God,
I'm joking. I would put it in the bank because what's the outcome? The worst thing you can do is say, "Hey, Dad, put it in this great investment," and then a month from now, if it loses 5% of its value and he doesn't stay with it, what for? And why put him through any sort of pain whatsoever? He's
sure.
He's probably not going to spend it in his lifetime. I'd bring him down to the local bank, someone he's banked with for years. I wouldn't let him talk to the financial advisor that sits in a corner. They'll try to sell him a fixed index annuity.
I don't know if you can buy an annuity at 102 years old.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
You think there's someone that would manufacture that?
Yes. I would put it in a bank CD, and I'd talk to the branch manager, and whatever they said they were going to give you his interest, I'd ask for a higher number.
And if your dad had said something like, "Look, I definitely want to do something beyond bank CDs." If he says, "Steve, I know I'm 102, but I'd love to try something different." It would really be something a well-balanced, diversified portfolio where you might have 30% exposed to the stock market, the rest in some conservative funds, mostly no-load mutual funds, but you'd be paying some sort of management fee to have someone manage that for you, and there it would fluctuate in value. Is there a good chance that 5 years down the road you would have more money in that type of strategy than in the bank? Absolutely. But
I think that's good advice.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess with it. I wouldn't mess with him.
I understand. I agree.
Yeah, I would do the same thing if it was my dad, Steve.
102.
That's awesome.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Enjoy.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Glad you called. We assume he's a good guy.
So we have these we have the clients of a firm, and the advisor was telling me that works with them. They were in their 90s. They became clients in their 90s, and so the advisor asked the clients, "What are your objectives with these monies?" And she answered with a straight face, "We're saving them for our golden years."
How old was she?
90. They've been clients for a number of years. Nice people.
So here's a funny. My son is a senior in high school, and he's applied to every school. They're all on the East Coast.
Really smart kid. Smart kid.
I have more than one kid. So
this one.
He's just really motivated that way. So he's interviewing with a lot of these schools. They'll have alumni do interviews. So this one alumni was, I think he was 70 some odd, interviewing Blake, and I guess they're done after the interview. And he asked my son something along the lines of, "Is there any question that you thought I should have asked?" And my son said, "Well, yeah, I was kind of wondering, what my goals are for the next 10 years, what I want to see my life look like the next 10 years." And the gentleman who's doing the interview thought that my son was asking him
what he wanted to do for
what
them.
My life looked like in 10 years. He said, "My son said the guy's 70-something, right?" And no one's ever asked me that. And he started dreaming about what his life might be like 10 years from now.
Wow.
And it was the interesting thing about that is that kind of got me realizing not that many people in their 70s get asked what their long-term goals and dreams are, but people still have long-term goals and dreams.
Yes.
I told my son.
At any age.
At any age.
At any age. And that's something I'm going to talk to my kids about, which is when you're taking an interview for college, start asking about them and you'll get into any school. Don't talk about yourself.
Well, we actually end up talking about, because I joke with my kid about, I think he'd be a good financial advisor one day. But so much of what good financial advising is really talking with individuals about what it is they're trying to accomplish in life. Not, the money is secondary. The money is a tool.
To get you there.
To provide some benefit in the future. It's not just necessarily about accumulating more wealth. Most people aren't concerned about accumulating more wealth. They want that wealth for something.
Yeah.
To accomplish something in their life.
I was having dinner with a guy, sold his company, and he said to me, if you had $5 million, Pat, what would you do with it? And I said, are you asking me what I would do if I had $5 million, or are you asking me what you should do if you had $5 million? And he said, what do you think I should do with the $5 million? I said, I have no idea. I just met you. I have no idea what you should do with the money.
You said, first of all, you should buy better wine for dinner tonight because
you should pick up this check,
buddy. You just sold your dinner. Yeah, but no, really, it's about what people are trying to accomplish.
And he came and visited with one of our advisors, and he said that that really actually made him think, because everyone he had talked to had promoted a product.
How you get from $5 million to $10 million or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Which might have been objective, but...
But it may not.
I think his objective might have been, how do I protect my $5 million bucks
yeah.
so I never have to worry about working again tomorrow?
Or how do I live a better life?
Yeah. Anyway, we're up against the clock here. We're going to take a quick break. I'd love to take your calls when we come back. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
And you might be joining us on KFBK Sacramento. We've been on KFBK 20-some-odd years. Or KGO, the Bay Area. We've been on KGO for almost a year. But we're on newer markets in Denver, KOA. I always like Denver, by the way. It's one of those areas
Denver.
I thought I could live if I didn't live where I lived.
My son lives there and loves it.
The Patriot in Los Angeles and Cogo in San Diego. Those are the stations we're on currently. And
in fact, I get to go to Denver.
Your son lives in Denver. He's a student there, right?
In Denver University.
Your son knows how to do it right for being a college student. I tell you what, if there's a second life that I could live, it would be being... Actually, now I think about, But he's at this stage,
I gotta tell you.
All of a sudden I start thinking about McLean as the childhood that the poor kid had to go through living under Pat.
Let me tell you a little.
Having a list of things to do every day.
Let me tell you a little story about my son. So my son has a keg.
What?
And he was telling me.
Do you think this is okay?
He's 18. He makes his choices.
18?
So he has this keg, and he's telling me. I said, well, did you make money on it? How do you? He says, I charge a buck a beer, and there's X amount of beers in the thing. So he said, every keg, I make $14.
And wait a minute. Your son is selling beer.
Well, I hope ABC isn't listening.
Yeah, I'm thinking this is probably.
This could be problematic.
This is in Colorado.
Okay, anyway.
You could probably sell marijuana without a problem in Colorado. It'd be illegal there.
Fred Smith.
Are you sure you want to share the story?
Yes. So he's telling me how he makes $14 for every keg. And then I say to him, so those 12 or 16 ounce glasses. And he says, he goes, I don't know, Dad. I said, so you could actually be losing money on every keg. He's like, I don't know whether.
This is your son's current business venture. Pat's son's quite brilliant. He started this little weed eating business. He would use.
We can't talk about that.
I can't?
No.
Why?
I don't think he was quite right with some people that collect taxes.
He was right with me. He got everything. He would use Google Earth to look at where it was.
He did well.
He did well with the little business.
But he had to file
in high school. He did this in high school.
He had to file a tax return this year. He was complaining to me how much he had to pay in taxes.
Yeah, my daughter did too. Her little summer job being a hostess. Dad! So upset about
the taxes.
Payroll tax. This is ridiculous. She's going on. This is ridiculous. Like, when I have to pay these taxes. Welcome to adulthood, honey.
Yeah.
Welcome to adulthood. Easy. Not quite adulthood.
Not easy. Are we going to take
this
call?
Your son is selling beer in the dorms?
Not in the dorms. That would be not right. Let's take this call. We're going to talk to Joe.
Unbelievable.
In San Jose. Joe, welcome to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I can't hear Joe.
Hello?
Oh, oh there hi, we Joe. Are, Joe.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Wonderful. How can we help you?
Okay, yeah. Good program. I listen to you every Saturday.
Hey, thanks, Joe.
Okay. I'd like to inquire about the possibility of getting an annuity for my 90-year-old mother, whether it's beneficial to do so or whether I even can do that.
What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, like I said, she's 90 years old, and just recently she had a spill. She fell, she had a contusion in her arm, and well, she's, you know, she still has the pain. It's been about a week. So, you know, me and the family members have been discussing, well, you know, should we put her, you know, in a convalescent home, okay, or should we get some home care? So we decided on home care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's about $25. She can, I mean, she can afford it. She has around $250,000 saved
in cash. In cash.
Yeah, in the bank. Yeah.
And does she own a home?
A mobile home.
Okay. So
and I'm also on the lease.
And her net worth is $250,000.
Correct. Yes.
So the question is, what you're trying to achieve is some vehicle in order to create income to make these payments for a nurse to come in or assisted living in home. Is that right?
Yeah. And my primary goal, I think, has always been, I mean, she's 90, but she's very strong and, you know, no pun intended, my greatest fear, she'll live to be 100.
Yeah.
So I want the money to last. I mean, I also, I want to get her the care, but if I could, you know, cut down on the expenses of mm-hmm. someone coming to the home, I mean.
So here's the challenge we've got, right? I mean, let's just be, so you've got, there's $250,000 that can provide for mom's care. You could take the $250,000 and have it all in cash sitting in a mattress and pull money out as needed, or you can invest it somewhere with the hope of getting some sort of return on it.
And whether that's an annuity or a balanced portfolio or bank CDs, that's a completely different discussion.
Yeah. Well, it is part of it. So now if we say, well, I need to get some sort of return, we go out to the financial marketplaces where you've got to go into the same pools that everybody else does. So an insurance company, for example, when they're investing their reserves or they're investing when somebody buys an annuity, they go out in the marketplace, they invest in bonds, they invest in mortgages. Well, we all know how low rates are right now, right?
Yes.
Rates are extremely low. They're low on CDs, but they're also low on, we know how low mortgages are. So there's a mortgage, the bank's lending that money. That's the kind of return that the bank's comfortable receiving. The building we're sitting in right now, the mortgage on it is an insurance company, a huge life insurance company,
yep.
What, about 4.25%, something like that?
Right around 4.
4%. So the insurance company said, we'll loan you the money in the building for 4%.
Which is amazing.
So that's how low interest rates are right now. So whether you're looking at buying some sort of annuity or investing in
government bonds or...
You're not going to be able to turn 250 into 500.
Or a stream of income that would support your mother for the care she needs and the care you want to give her.
For 10 years.
You're going to end up using the principal. You're going to end up using the principal.
Eventually, yeah.
And the danger with an annuity is...
Assuming there's an insurance company that even write one.
Well, if you found one that's going to write it on a 90-year-old, it's probably not going to be the best rated insurance company.
But you're not... If there's any liquidity in it, you're not going to get any higher rates of return.
And then you're going to lock money up that you may not want to lock up. You're going to lack liquidity.
Yeah, yeah.
So unfortunately, about the only solution that you have is to keep it in the bank.
And our concern,
especially,
and our concern, what we see happen with people, investors at times, is when they're searching for higher yields, they tend to gravitate to things that are so much higher in risk than they understand and would otherwise do. We see people invest in all kinds of crazy things because they're hoping for a really high rate of return. But that's just not the reality right
now. Yeah, it doesn't. And what people end up doing is putting more risk in a portfolio than is
way
appropriate. If you go to our website, moneymatters.com, I'm looking this up right now. I know there was a clip on there, moneymatters.com. Yeah, here it is. Does an annuity make sense for an elderly parent? It's an audio clip. It's at moneymatters.com. And I would encourage you to listen. Joe, I would encourage you to listen to that. And anyone else out there that is considering the purchase of any annuity, whether it's for you or an elderly parent, we also have a clip on there called Why Everyone Wants to Sell You an Annuity and We Don't. And it talks about the pitfalls of annuities. So I appreciate the call.
Yeah, Joe, I wish we had some better. I would say stay away from any sort of annuity. And you're probably best off with some CDs.
And when you go to the bank,
laddering the CDs.
When you're at the bank, we see this continually. They try to steer you to the little person that sits in the well.
It might be a big person.
The nicest dressed person in that bank branch is, they call him a financial advisor / annuity salesperson. That's what they call them. stay away from that. Those people. Stay away.
I've had some experience with the annuities, and everything I've ever heard is pretty much negative.
Yeah, I mean, there's a time for them,
but it's
1% of the time.
But the problem is that they're not used appropriately, and the people that sell them, it just reminds me of my grandfather always used to say. He said, "If all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail."
And so many people are selling them. That's what.
So many people are selling them as the solution to everything.
Yeah. Anyway, wish you well, Joe. Sorry, we don't have any.
Okay, one more thing. If she exhausts her expenses,
when it starts getting down there, then you're going to go on to some sort of state or federal aid,
that's right.
Mostly state.
Okay. All right. I mean, it won't come out of my pocket.
And that is correct.
No.
It will not come out of your pocket.
Well, unless you want to.
And actually, you probably shouldn't have your name on the. I would talk to
it's
an
a
estate.
Lease.
Oh, it's a lease.
Yeah, he said it was a lease.
Oh, got it. I was talking about the home.
And a lot of times, thanks, Joe. A lot of times people will try to artificially impoverish a parent.
And the government is keen to this, and they will look back.
And there are people that will sell kinds of products.
Anyway. They will look back. The government is keen to people artificially impoverishing themselves, and they'll look back.
Anyway, we're running out of time. You know, it's interesting. We see as we've helped, Hanson McLean's helped, 4,000. We have 4,000 households that work with our firm and our advisors. And many people are at the retirement age anyway. We see a lot of people getting squeezed. They're taking care of mom or dad at the older age. Oftentimes they've got kids coming back at home. It's a challenging time. But I tell you, we've got some great solutions to help. If you would like to talk with one of our advisors, we've got some fantastic team of advisors. Also, our website, moneymatters.com. It's the Money Matters Academy. It is full of great, useful information. We've got wonderful videos on there. We've got audio. We've got articles and just about anything you can think of when it comes to these financial topics and retirement topics, you'll find at moneymatters.com. We are out of time. We're here on this radio station, this same hour, every week, where you can get our podcast, moneymatters.com. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.